Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Thanks, Josh. And before we dive in this conversation with our guest today, unless you've been living under a rock, you've seen what's happening with women's sports here in the U.S. and worldwide over the last several years. Last year, women's sports contributed over $1 billion in revenue for the first time in history, and that number is growing. Women-founded companies have received less than 2% of the venture dollars in the last 5 years. Today, we're here with Allison Felix, an athlete and an entrepreneur who's redefining leadership on her own terms.
Not only is she the most decorated U.S. track and field Olympian in history, she's also a very impressive business leader and advocate for equity. She's the co-founder of Saish, a lifestyle brand built by and for women, and Always Alpha, a modern talent management firm focused on unlocking the full potential of women's sports, elevating athletes, broadcasters, coaches, and changemakers, both on and off the field.
Allison's story is wonderful. It's one of resilience, reinvention, and purpose. She's turned global athletic success at the highest level into a launching pad for a business career in sportswear, culture, and contributing to the broader conversation about women in leadership.
Today, we're excited to explore how Allison made the leap from world-class athlete to visionary entrepreneur. We'll learn about the value shaping her companies and the legacy she's building beyond the track. We're so glad to have you with us. Allison Felix, welcome to C-Speak.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, so you are the most decorated U.S. track and field athlete of all time. When you look back at your training days, what was your mindset like? How did you approach things like preparation and discipline and also setbacks?
I was hyper focused on performance and preparation. That was really everything for me. You know, it gave me confidence. It all centered around the training plan, 6 days a week, 5 hours a day. And that became the lifestyle. And so it's all the discipline, the sacrifice. It's not your everyday life. Everything is hundredths of a second. How can we get better? And so I dialed in on not cutting any corners, doing all of the work and making sure that I was prepared for the biggest moments. And then you just do that year after year. It becomes the habit.
And all sometimes to shave off hundredths of a second.
It's wild. You know, I think about being an Olympian in my race. When done right, it's about 21 seconds. And so every 4 years, you have 21 seconds, you know, to show the world that work that you've been doing.
And 1/10 of a second could make all the difference.
It could change your life.
We talk about discipline, being prepared in mm-hmm. your athletic career. How have these principles translated into your role as an entrepreneur and your role as a business leader?
I'm definitely leaning on a lot of those characteristics that gave me the foundation. And so it is the work ethic. It is being resilient, you know, being able to, I feel like in athletics, there are so many hurdles, adversity, you know, that's just inevitable. And now in business, I'm seeing that is also the same. Relying on how to navigate injury in sport or the current environment in business, you know, you're going to have the storm, but it's how are you able to navigate? How are you able to rely on team? And so a lot of those things that I learned in sport, I'm definitely relying on in business.
You were involved with the LA 24 bid, which ultimately became LA 28. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that experience and perhaps about your recent appointment to the LA 28 board.
Being a part of the LA, then the 24 bid was really an eye-opening experience at the time because I was still competing. I didn't really understand the other side of the Olympic movement and how all those things worked, but I knew that I loved the Olympics and I love LA. I am a native Angeleno and I wanted the Olympics to come back here. And so seeing the inner workings gave me a peek at the business behind the Olympic Games and an understanding there, and was really excited to get the 28 games. And now as a LA 28 board member, as an IOC member, I am on that other side. And I am, you know, thinking about what the games looks like when it comes here, how it impacts us Angelenos, how it impacts businesses, who's involved. And it is a totally different approach. You know, as an athlete, I had no idea how much was involved on the business side of the games. But now I am involved in the full picture.
Well, it's really interesting because when you go back 25 or 30 years, the Olympics was really thought of as an amateur competition, mm-hmm. right? And then I don't know whether it was coming out of the dream team yeah. or what it was. The Olympics has become a big business yeah. and athletes can actually be professional athletes and Olympians at the same time. So How do you see the best opportunity for businesses to connect authentically with these athletes, either before, during, or after their careers?
It's a huge business. And one thing that I noticed with businesses and connecting with athletes, definitely from my experience at my five Olympic Games, is they come in for this 2-week period. And it's this very kind of transactional experience a lot of times. I think the untapped area is that, you know, these athletes were training for the games for years and years. And to be able to approach it from a long-term aspect, there's so much potential there. There's rich storytelling. You're able to support the athlete as a whole, and not just this moment where the world is watching, but I think there's just so much more storytelling if you capture before, during, and even the legacy of it all.
Well, I think it's interesting because as social media has evolved, it allows you as athletes to tell your own stories.
Yeah.
You don't need to rely on business or others to tell the stories you have, right?
Exactly. And I think we're seeing that, especially from a lot of Olympians who have been kind of put into that box of the 2-week period. Now they're able to bring fans, they're able to bring people who relate to their stories in to show them the behind the scenes and what it's really like day in and day out to train for the Olympic Games and to be able to compete there as well.
Well, from that standpoint, as a fan, as a spectator, we also have an opportunity to engage and be inspired by the athletes. I follow people on social media from the Paris Games. And in the past, I wouldn't have been able to do that on the same level. So I can continue to be inspired beyond just during the games.
I can't tell you how many people used to ask me, what do you do in between the 4 years? You know, what happens? Like, I know the Olympics, but what else are you up to? And then it's like you get to show them, oh, track and field is a professional circuit. You go overseas, you run races, and they can really get an idea. So I think, you know, social media has really changed the landscape for athletes.
Yeah, I had a chance to watch over the weekend. There were track and field championships, I believe it was in Jamaica. And
yeah,
it was really early in the season. But just to watch some of the records already be broken, it's going to be an exciting year.
It is. Yeah, we have, I mean, leagues are really hot all around. And so there's the Grand Slam Track League, which you saw. And like you said, it's really exciting to bring people into the sport who might be, you know, casual fans, but you're showing them a different aspect of it.
You're involved in the Athletes Commission for 24, which became then 28. Recently, we had these wildfires here in Los Angeles. There's a lot of concern over air quality. What do you think the challenges exist for LA to ensure that it becomes a great destination for LA 28, a safe destination for the athletes and the fans?
I think everyone from Los Angeles has been here. You understand the great landscape that we have and all the, I think the amazing things is that we're going to use all the venues, you know, all the way from in the heart of LA, Long Beach, you know, you have a lot of different area that's going to be used. And something that I've been talking to a lot of, you know, commission members and just people in the movement around is that now there's this real opportunity to show Los Angeles unified and the strength in coming together. And I think mm-hmm. that LA 28 now has the potential to really celebrate that and be a moment to say we are healing and rebuilding and coming together.
Well, going back to Todd's intro, where he mentioned the unprecedented momentum that we're seeing in women's sports, and, you know, he shared that in 2024, the industry revenue surpassed $1 billion. That said, investment and media coverage still lags behind that of men's sports, even though women's sports have cultivated a very deep and engaged fan base. How can teams, athletes, leagues, and brands capitalize on that really distinct and impressive consumer behavior?
I think they have to make a real investment and understand that this is not just a moment. The numbers don't lie. You know, you're talking about what came in, you know, and we have to understand that this is here to stay. Making true investments, whether it's through leagues or in watching the consumer behavior as well. You know, they're not just watching, they're also buying and supporting and fully engaged. And so saying that we're really going to put dollars behind this and that this is not a fleeting thing.
Other than it not being a fleeting thing, if you were in front of an investor, you were in front of a CEO today, right now, what would your message be? What would your business case for investment in women's sports be today?
This is such an exciting time. There's so much growth and it's a smart business decision. We're watching the numbers and we're seeing it continue to elevate. And the athletes that are involved, we're not just talking about them on the field of play. They are content creators. They are entrepreneurs. They are brand builders. And so I think that there's a lot of, we're just at the beginning. There's so much untapped area as well, that there's a lot of ways that we can go here.
Absolutely.
We talk about the role of female athletes and as brand builders, entrepreneurs, cultural influencers. Is that what led you to start this new management company? Is that what led to that? Or talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it really started because in my career, my brother managed me and, you know, we're business partners. We were able to do a lot of kind of different things than kind of your traditional model. And I had a lot of athletes asking for suggestions on where they should go for representation. And I couldn't really confidently send them in any one direction because what my brother and I did was really piece it together. And we took experts from here and, you know, really kind of created this boutique experience. And so in thinking that doesn't really exist today, I felt like this is an opportunity to create it and to create something that has a different model than what we've traditionally seen.
And what strategies do you think are going to work best to maximize the value of these female athletes?
Really thinking about them as a whole person. I look at some of the traditional agencies and it's this kind of cookie cutter model. And it's a lot of the sponsors that we've seen in sports for a really long time. And so it's breaking outside of that mold and saying, let me listen to you as a person. What are your interests? What are the things that you want to accomplish on the field and off? How do we put a strategy together to accomplish that? And that's something that typically isn't done. And so really saying, okay, we want to do this different. We want to create it and really tailor it specifically to each individual that we represent.
I'd love to hear an example. You and your management team maybe crafted around your experiences that the show thinking outside the box.
I mean, I think Sasha is probably the best example of that. I took my real life experience of competing on the track and going through a hardship, being left without a sponsor, and then creating a shoe company myself to be able to wear as I competed. And it's like you have these options of what's out there. And it's really unheard of to say you could actually create your own. And I remember going back to the Olympics after founding Sage, I mean, being the first athlete ever to compete in a brand that they own. And so I think we're in the time where athletes are not going to just accept what has always been. We're going to push outside of the box and see which other ways we can get this done.
When you pick such a competitive area, apparel and footwear and shoes, as you break into that, it requires significant capital. It requires an understanding of supply chain expertise in a time where supply chain is so unreliable and difficult. And of course, brand trust.
Yeah.
What more importance is there than brand trust? As this was all happening and you created this brand, what were the biggest operational challenges that you faced when you launched Sage? And then how did you overcome them?
Part of the beauty of it is if you don't know how hard it is, you're going to just dive full in. And I definitely didn't know the full scope of things. But we launched at a very difficult time during the pandemic. And right away, we were hit with all the supply chain issues. And I would say that was the greatest challenge. We launched at Olympic trials and we had all of these pre-orders and it was this huge, exciting moment. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have product. So being able to pivot from that and say, okay, how do we still show up? And thankfully, you know, I've had an amazing team behind me and we could say, okay, we're going to tap into our community. We're going to show up in real life and we're going to do things differently in this meantime. But I mean, it is a very difficult industry. Like you said, it's legacy, you know, giants who have been in the space forever. I am encouraged that there has been a lot of movement recently with brands like Hoka and On. And when I think about, you know, when I grew up and being a brand loyalist, you know, I saw someone recently, kids, wearing Nike shoes and like Adidas shorts. That was like a carnival.
Never done that,
yeah.
Right?
Unheard of, right? But they're doing that now. You know, there are new options. And I think people are being really thoughtful with how they spend as well.
So in times initially when there were supply chain issues, you were able to fill the gap with engagement.
Yeah, it really, I think also the benefit of being a small company and being a startup is that we can be flexible and we were forced into that. And thankfully, we could still keep that excitement and engagement up until, you know, product did arrive. But it was a really challenging time to be in, especially to be really new to the industry.
We talk about building a company against behemoths in the industry.
Yes.
Nike, Adidas, others. Talk a little bit about when you're thinking about starting the company. Mm-hmm. Do you want to bring in experts in a shoe field? Did you want to bring in venture capitalists?
Yeah.
How do you think about ensuring the highest likelihood of success for you as a founder?
Early days, it was really about understanding from advisors, people who had done it before, and having that vote of confidence, but also realizing that we're creating something that hasn't been done before. And so our shoes are specifically made to fit the form of the female foot. Traditionally, shoes have been made off of a blast, which is just the mold of a foot, and it's been a man's foot to make women's footwear. And so knowing that we were here to create a new category to disrupt, we also needed to build a team around that. And so thankfully, because we are mission driven, we had a lot of experts who came over from Nike, who came over from Adidas, who really connected on our mission. And they just said, you know, we want to be a part of this, and talent that we would not have been able to attract if it were not for that mission came along and really helped us get off the ground.
Talk a little bit how you've capitalized Saish, and how do you see that growing? Do you need to raise more capital? Are you going to go back out to the private equity industry? How do you think about that and the challenges that you face as a woman and a woman founder?
I've experienced the challenges firsthand now. And as we raised the first time, as we raised our Series A, I really felt it, you know, going into so many rooms, you know, pitch after pitch, and you hear so many no's, and it's really easy to get discouraged. And that's where I do feel like I was able to tap into some of the athlete side.
It's like, persistence. Right?
Yes, because you can't, you know, you hear a no and you just got to keep going if you truly believe in it. So right now we're doing kind of a bridge round, an A extension. And the same thing, you know, the same challenges. It's a hard environment right now, but understanding the mission, tapping into that resilient feeling and knowing a lot of learnings from the first time. I want the right partner. I don't want to just take any money. You know, I really want to have some strategic partners as well. And so that's really how I'm thinking about building now, and also just shifting. Right now, we're looking at more family offices and what is going to allow for the best growth for us.
Well, you've got the community engagement. You've got the brand storytelling that you shared with us. How are you leveraging your personal brand mm-hmm. and your incredibly large athlete network in order to drive consumer loyalty and then things like long-term growth?
We definitely get a lot of earned media and we lean on that. But it's important to me that this brand is not just about me. It won't make it if it's just about me. It's really connecting with this issue that we don't see in the market. And so that's women-specific shoes. And so starting off from the place supporters of mine and friends and all of that, but really taking it to that next level and letting the story continue to live on through different marketing efforts and influencers and really tapping into that catching fire.
And as you look at your growth, have you come up with a plan for where this can go? How big can it get? What's the ultimate long-term plan here?
When I look at how big it can get, I'm moved by the fact that it is category creation. It does not exist. And so to me, that the potential is enormous. Women aren't really looking for a new option because they don't know they're wearing men's shoes. And so it's being a little bit creative in how we are going to achieve that end goal. The potential is absolutely there. It's just putting all the pieces together.
How have you been creative? How have you seen success in educating women that this category has never existed before and should?
Collabs have done really well for us. Being able to use others' platforms and come alongside has been a bright spot for us. Wholesale has been a bright spot also. And so really leaning into that in our origin story and being able to tell that to the masses. And I don't think we've ever really had the capital to do it in the way that I feel it needs to be done. And so I think that's a lot around what our raise is now and being able to execute on some of the plans that we have.
What will the next round of capital be used for?
Marketing is the biggest thing. You know, of course, a little bit of team building and some innovation and product as well, but really being able to come in at this time where women's sports is on fire and being a part of that along with solving a problem. There is actually a consequence to women wearing men's shoes. And Michelle Kang is doing a lot of this research now that we're starting to see around injuries that women are having because of not wearing the proper equipment. And so I think we're just going to continue to see more of that. And I want Saish to be able to show up at every stage in that.
When you said women don't realize they're wearing men's shoes.
Yeah.
And that's something I've never heard before. Mm. So thank you for putting that out there and working towards solving that problem and sharing it with us.
I appreciate that.
Have you engaged any other high profile athletes as ambassadors to the shoes?
We would love to. And that is some future plans. Okay. We've really looked at the NIL space where we are right now with our company. That's kind of more obtainable. So I'm really excited about some potential partnerships on the collegiate front.
Let's come back to your most recent venture, which is Always Alpha, the full service management firm. Talk about how you maximize the presence of these athletes and their images and how you get them out there.
It's really all about who they are, you know, what they want to accomplish and how can we allow them to show up as themselves. Of course, we want to support their efforts on the field of play, most importantly, but we also want to understand whether they want to build a brand or one of our athletes wants to open up a school back home and how can we support that and bring in, you know, brands, different brands who want to be a part of that as well. And so it's really putting the strategy together with the athlete at the center and then working from there.
So similar to the shoe brand, which is driven by and for women, mm-hmm. Always Alpha tailors to representing female athletes. How is this different from what we're seeing from other management firms? And how are you different?
The bigger agencies really have that model where you come in and get the standard endorsements that have been around for a really long time. And we're trying to look at it different. We're trying to bring in brands that are focused on women who haven't typically been in this space before. And yes, it is a tailored experience. We want it to have that boutique feel and know that we are here to support you in all your interests. And it's a really different feel than some of the larger agencies out there.
Would you say it's more customized?
Absolutely. It's definitely customized. What works for one athlete is not going to work for the other. And we want them to be able to show up as themselves. I know for a long time in my career, it felt like I just have to have my head down and I'm just the medals and that's what it's all about. And it wasn't until I got to a certain point where I understood my platform and I could have an opinion on certain things and an interest in maternal health. And I could, you know, all these other aspects of my life, I could also create change there and show up there. And just that same idea of bringing that to other athletes as well.
You talked a little bit about the challenges of scaling the talent management business or Always Alpha.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very high touch business, a very personalized business. How are you formed? How are you structured? How can you ensure that you can both scale and maintain the quality of service to your clients?
Thankfully, we have a parent company, which is Dolphin Entertainment, and that has really allowed us to do this at scale, to have that support and resources to be able to show up for our female athletes. And so we want everyone to have that experience. And so we will grow slowly. You know, we're not looking to sign 100 athletes right away. We're looking to really build intentionally and really thinking about how we can have the most impact for those we are choosing to partner with.
How many athletes do you have today on the platform?
Right now, we have about 20 athletes that we exclusively represent.
So going back, you were mentioning about customization and brand partnerships. Outside of the usual sports industry sponsors, can you share some types of brands that you're bringing into the conversation that perhaps haven't traditionally been there?
I'm really excited about brands that are fashion brands and wellness brands, brands who haven't been in the space. When I look at some of the athletes, top female athletes now, and I look at some of the traditional sponsors, you have your Gatorades and your Nikes and, you know, these sponsors that were also Michael Jordan sponsors so many years ago, but different brands, whether it's like an Aloe or a Lululemon, you know, or a brand that is not traditionally hasn't been in the space. And especially as we're seeing athletes in fashion really coincide, I think there is potential for more high-end fashion to enter the conversation as well.
I was doing a little bit of research for this, and I saw that you recently, on National Women's Day, rang the bell at the NASDAQ.
Oh, yes.
So tell me a little bit about that experience, and how did that compare to crossing the finish line at the Olympics?
It was a lot of fun. It was amazing because we got to bring a lot of our group from Always Alpha. And just to be there, you know, on a day that is all about celebrating women around the world, it was about progress, but also committing to the work that's being done. Just a fun experience. You don't often think that you'll do something like that. And so to be in Times Square and see it all go down, it was really fun.
I have to ask, as we're sitting here, and I imagine so many of our listeners are going to want to know the same answer to this question. You're inspiring all of us in so many different ways. Was there somebody that inspired you to become the athlete you were? And is that a different person or group of people that may have inspired you in business?
I find inspiration all over the place. I am a huge basketball fan. So a lot of my kind of idols growing up were the basketball players, you know, your Michael Jordans, you know, Kobe Bryant. And then as I got into sport, Jackie Joyner Kersee became a huge idol and also mentor to me. And just really invested time with me. I was coached by her husband, and so we had a personal relationship, and she really guided me. And so as I moved into business, I felt like it was important to have that same relationship with someone. And so I have an incredible business mentor and a lot of advisors that I look to. Melody Hobson has been someone who has really been helpful at every step of the way. And I can check in with an idea, or I'm dealing with this challenge. Can I get your perspective? And I think it's important to get that feedback, especially as I'm new into a space.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about your legacy on the track, right? You've won gold medals, most decorated track and field, U.S. athlete of all time. The track at USC is named after you, I believe. What do you want your business legacy to be?
I would love for it to be about creating spaces for women, you know, spaces that weren't previously there. When I think about the projects that I'm involved with, that's really the theme, from the shoes not being made for women to the talent management firm. It's how can I show up? And I think I've taken that a lot from the real life experience on the track and really having to advocate for myself. And I want to continue that in business as well.
So Allison, thank you again for joining us today. You've made the journey from Angelino to world-class athlete, to ambassador, to entrepreneur, to now hopefully business mogul. It's great to hear your story and the progress you've made, and look forward to seeing all the wonderful successes you have in the coming years.
Thank you so much for having me.
Allison, I'll echo Todd's remarks. Thank you so much. It's been truly fascinating to get to know you, learn a little bit about your brands. For us, this has been a very special experience, and we're excited to continue to follow your success. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation.
On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, thank you so much for listening. To ensure that you are notified about our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.